survive to 25, get the fix in 26. Remember those sayings when we came up with these little rhymes to tell ourselves to just hang in there and the economy would get better? We're still waiting, unfortunately. And it might not be over yet. Because look, we're not about doomerism here, but it's also not useful to stick our heads in the sand. And when the government put out their budget recently, they also put out a bunch of economic forecasting that could directly impact your life. We're talking cost of living going up again, but in specific areas, changes to the job market, interest rates. And if we at least know how these things are coming at us, we can plan for them. Who better to help us than Christoph Schumacher? Christoph is a professor of innovation and economics at Massey University and the director of the Knowledge Exchange Hub. But for all of that fancy introduction, he can actually talk like a real person, which is so important right now when we're in a fairly uncomfortable spot financially.
It feels a bit like every year we get told next year will be better and then it's not happening. It was rough. Last year was rough. Economic growth was very, very slow. But finally, sort of in the fourth quarter, December quarter, we picked up a little bit of growth. And just when we thought things are getting better, then the Middle East crisis happened. And that, of course, has slowed growth down and has put pressure on inflation, which has gone up again.
So yeah, if you're doing it tough right now, it's not just vibes. And when you understand the forces behind what's going on, it makes it a little easier to create that all-important plan.
Oil prices affect everything. If you buy something at the supermarket, well, it would have come from a producer, be transported to a processing plant, be transported to a distribution center. By the time it hits the supermarket, a lot of petrol would have been used up and that costs more and that goes straight onto the prices.
When does all of this maybe finally get better?
The numbers suggest that economic growth is going to be very slow for the rest of the year. But there's also nothing in there that suggests we are ready for a disaster.
So, welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker, who makes money simple for you. And today, why is everything so expensive? And when is it actually going to get better?
This episode of Making Sense is supported by Odoo, the all-in-one solution to make running your business smoother and more affordable. Go to odoo.com, that's O-D-O-O.com for more. I want to help as many people as possible reach financial freedom by taking control of their money. You can help me in that mission. Two really easy ways. First, hit subscribe wherever you like to listen, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast player. Then send this episode to a friend so we can all level up together. Then the show grows and I can keep giving you the money info that makes a difference for your life. Okay, back to it.
Welcome, Christoph. Thank you so much for coming back in. The last time we were chatting live in front of the audience about all things economy, and now we get to have a proper deep dive, just you and I. So really appreciate you coming back on the podcast. I feel like I've been chatting to people a lot about how they feel with their money. The tone of my DMs and the tone of the emails have gone a bit dark. I feel like everyone's been talking about survive to 25 and then the fix in 26. And now we've had a new budget from the government, which came with all of this analysis that this year is not going to be great either. What do you think? What are you seeing when you look at some of the economic indicators and how things actually are out there? What are some of the facts behind the feelings?
It feels a bit like every year we get told next year will be better and then it's not happening. It was rough. Last year was rough. Economic growth was very, very slow. But finally, sort of in the fourth quarter, December quarter, we picked up a little bit of growth. And just when we thought things are getting better, then the Middle East crisis happened. Oil is just such a crucial commodity that it affects everything. It puts prices up no matter where you look. And that, of course, has slowed growth down and has put pressure on inflation, which has gone up again. Economists would now sort of use a bad word, stagflation. It's when the economy is slowing down, but inflation is going up and unemployment is rising as well. So that indicates to us this is not just a short-term issue, but there is something more systemic happening. And that's what causes, I guess, the the uncertainty, the discomfort of people in the gloom, as you have described.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think that stagflation term is one of the scary words.
It's bad, right? Because people instantly associated with the 70s, the huge unemployment, the double-figure inflations around the world, and we had no idea what to do. We are nowhere near that, just sort of at the start of that. So no, there's no need for panic, and we are much better prepared.
What indicators are you keeping an eye on right now? What do you think are areas where there are interesting things happen? And I mean that as a very neutral descriptor. It could be interesting good, interesting bad.
GDP is always a value you need to look out for because it tells us how our economy is actually doing. Problem, of course, is it takes about 3 to 6 months before we know the figures. But GDP is a crucial value, and inflation, of course, as well. Look at some of the expectation of yields and bond market to just have an idea what the market thinks. Again, but the key factors are GDP and inflation, because those are the values the Reserve Bank government would use to decide what to do.
Yeah, well, we are recording this very soon after the government budget came out. And of course, it's very interesting where the government is putting its spending. I also find it very interesting, the forecasts and the data that they put out of what information they are using to making those spending decisions on. And in that most recent one, they were very clear that they see inflation, aka cost of living, going up to 4% this year, which is outside the bounds of what they aim for. It's quite high. It's not as high as it has gone, but it's not great, right? And in that, they were saying, as you mentioned, the fuel crisis, what's happening in Iran is a big factor in that. So when you saw that number, and the reasoning behind it, what do you think? Is it going to be 4% this year, or is it possible that cost of living could even go higher?
4% is probably a realistic value, simply because of the oil shock. Oil prices affect everything. If you buy something at the supermarket, well, it would have come from a producer, be transported to a processing plant, be transported to a distribution center. By the time it hits the supermarket, a lot of petrol would have been used up, and that costs more, and that goes straight onto the prices. And there's a trickle effect. An economy is not like a finely tuned sports car where a little pull on the steering wheel changes direction. No, it's like more a huge cruise liner. When something happens and you try to change direction, it takes quite some time for it to trickle through. So we haven't quite seen the full impact of the oil crisis yet on all the items we use every day. So that will increase in inflation further. On top of this, and that's often ignored, is that our inflation value is a compound value of imported inflation. Those are those goods we import, and if they become more expensive overseas, well, we bring that inflation to New Zealand, but also the non-tradable good, our domestic inflation. These are goods we don't trade, like electricity, insurance, council rates, and these have been going up. What has been driving inflation up before the oil crisis was not the imported goods, it's our domestic inflation. And we still haven't got that under control. So yes, 4% doesn't seem to be an unrealistic value at all.
Yeah, and the things you mentioned there, things like rates and insurance, those are things that people can't really avoid. That's really tricky. Is there anything we can do on those accounts?
That is the real problem. We can't do anything, but it also means any changes in the OCR won't impact on that either. So there's nothing much government can do. The only way is to become better at it, more efficient in our public services. And that has been an issue the government has flagged from day one. Reducing the number of public servants was certainly one of those promises they made in the campaign. And there's something we need to look at, because our domestic inflation hasn't been looking good. And there's something that would help people if council rates wouldn't go up necessarily, or even go down, if electricity prices or insurance costs have gone up hugely over the past few years. If those things that we can't avoid would not increase as much. That would help people as well with the cost of living crisis. So there must be a look, we must look at both sides of that coin, the tradable inflation, things like an oil shock where we have little power to change, but also our domestic inflation where we could do something.
Yeah, if you were given a magic wand, or even better, the ear of the Prime Minister, and who is guaranteed to do just one thing, what would you like to see happen to tackle that cost of living for people? What do you think would move the lever the fastest?
Providing people with some financial support. Now, that would help instantly, right? But that's probably not a very sensible idea, because the day would require New Zealand to take on more debt, and more debt needs to be serviced, so there will be less money later on. And it's, well, it would put more pressure on inflation, provide handouts, and people will start spending more, and inflation will go up again. So that's not a fix. So what might be the quickest cure might not be the smartest thing to do. And I think the government has signaled this quite well in the budget. It's a very no-frills, be disciplined now, so we have more later kind of budget, which is not unusual in election years. But it's a very sort of kind of grown-up, very liberal kind of budget. And political liberalism doesn't mean anything goes. No, it simply means that the government puts responsibility back to the individual. You need to look after yourself, and we won't intervene. So that suggests that we are not providing handouts, or the government will not be giving handouts, but it puts the responsibility back on each of us to make sure we make the savings we need to make. To solve the cost of living crisis, we need to just get better at the things we do. At the heart of it is our low, low productivity, right? We rank right at the bottom of the OECD in terms of productivity. We just need to start solving that problem. I mean, one of the first things David Seymour did was get rid of the Productivity Commission, because it hasn't done much, because productivity had been falling, even though we had a commission, but didn't really do much to improve productivity either. Just by getting rid of the Productivity Commission doesn't mean we have gotten better. We haven't quite figured it out how to increase productivity. And if we could, then that would help, because that would actually generally increase the pie. It's not just cutting it the same pie in different ways, but it would actually increase the pie, and that would help.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I feel like this has been talked about for years now, that New Zealanders famously got really low productivity, where we go to work for many hours, we don't earn as much as other places, or produce as much as other places for that time going to work. And people have been talking in circles about fixing this. Like you say, we had a whole productivity commission, didn't really seem to fix it. Is there a fix that we're just missing that you see?
The issue really is that the industries we focus on and we are good at are sort of at the end of their productivity growth. If you look, for example, at the dairy sector, there's only so much milk you can squeeze out of a cow, and we've gotten pretty good at this. So there's not many productivity gains to be achieved. The same in the whole primary sector. You can't easily grow more apple or kiwi fruit, and we can't let more people into the country of tourism without destroying what we have and why people would come and visit New Zealand. So part of the issue is that we are focusing on sectors where productivity gains are low. These are things that are not easily scalable. Think of somebody who develops a software program. You can just scale that up easily and take it to the world. You can't scale up producing more milk very easily. It's not a scalable kind of operation when we already reached quite high levels of efficiency in these sectors. So the productivity growth is just slow. We simply would need to change our mindset to become more innovative and focus on sectors where that are easily scalable and where there is more productivity growth still available. But that's not a quick process, because if you think of New Zealand, there's a strong history of what we do. That's not easily changed. And we had it very good for a long time, and that's made us a bit complacent, and now it's difficult to change that mindset.
Are there any areas where New Zealand has shown some good possibilities, areas that you think we could lean into that would be better and more scalable?
Kiwis are clever people, very innovative people. New Zealand registers a lot of patents per person, but the problem is these patents never end up in global products. So we are good in coming up with things. We are very poor in converting these good ideas into success stories.
Why is that?
We don't like failure, but to have a good idea, you need to be allowed to fail. Great fan of Einstein. He famously said, if I knew what I was doing, it wouldn't be called research.
I haven't heard that. That's good.
When you start off something, you have no idea what will come out of it. And that's a risky part. And some ideas just don't work. But you need to be allowed to fail a few times to get the big winner. And New Zealand is not very good in accepting sort of these upstart failures. So maybe we can't afford them because we are reasonably small and don't have the financial means.
Okay, so small recap, and correct me at any point if I'm putting words into your mouth incorrectly, that basically you see it as, you know, the inflation problem, the cost of living, the sort of general economic sadness that we're dealing with at the moment is coming down to we need to have an overall rev up of our economy. We need to deal with this productivity and maybe think about how we make money in general in order to fix these larger issues. And for that, we need to maybe get a bit better at accepting some risks and building bigger and different things. How do we encourage that? Is that a government problem? Is that a business sector problem? Both? What do we do?
It's probably a mix because we have success stories. Fisher Paykel Healthcare is globally super strong. We were able to build catamarans that were better than anyone else with big wind tunnels and a lot more money. So in the boating industry, we've done great things. Even in the dairy sector, we've come up with good things. So there are pockets, but it's not strategic. I think that is part of the issue. I always think sport is a good microcosmos to see what's going on in the real world. If you want to be successful here in New Zealand, there are no big institutions who support you, but you have individual pockets of brilliance where we have sports people who suddenly win 8 gold medals or so at the Olympic Games, but they have done so mainly by themselves rather than there be a strategic approach. And again, that comes down to money issue as well. We don't have that much money to fund all these different sports, but it's a reflection of what happens in the economy as a whole. So I guess it needs a combination. We need the business sector to come up and those people who've done well to share with us why and what worked and how it worked, but there needs to be the government support. And we have had this over the year with Callaghan Innovation and Innovation Grants, but it hasn't really worked. So we need to figure out what went wrong.
Well, yeah, I was going to say they got rid of Callaghan Innovation as well, didn't they? Yeah. So Productivity Commission gone, Callaghan Innovation gone. Are we maybe going a little backwards on some of these ideas that you're suggesting?
I hope not, but we certainly don't do as much as we could.
Okay. And then the other thing, of course, is they are forecasting that unemployment towards the end of this year peaks at around the 5.5%, also not a great number. And I've heard a lot of, it's quite anecdotal, but it is sort of a lot of stories I've heard of people looking for work for months and just not being able to get anything. A lot of competition out in the job market, quite hard to get new things. So do you think that's also linked into this, that if we're dealing with, you know, cost of living and then we've got this unemployment problem where people are increasingly finding it's a tough market out there, that we do need to look at other ways of making money? I mean, the problem is New Zealand is so far away from a lot of other places, right? And that does have an impact on what we can do. Do we need to embrace more of a digital future, maybe?
What you hear anecdotally has economic reasons. If an economy is slowing down, it is always related to an increase in unemployment. And the uncertainty at the moment, I think that's what's driving businesses from just holding back on investments, because we don't know where interest rates and the OCR are going. We don't know what inflation will do. So companies are cautious. They're not necessarily expanding or investing, which simply means people find it harder to find jobs. Which sectors we need to get into? Well, digital information technology is certainly on the up. Aged care is something that is pretty resistant because We know the population is getting older. We know we need more healthcare. So that's an area, certainly the whole medical space, medical equipment is certainly part where we can do well, and we have done well in the part. But yes, the direction would probably be more high tech rather than primary. And I think the challenge for New Zealand is being so far away. We need to attract people wanting to work here for the lifestyle, because this is what New Zealand has to offer. And especially in that digital age, people don't need to be in the center where everything happens. You can work from other countries. So the challenge will be to make New Zealand an attractive enough place to be so that people come here and work from here and develop things rather than our brightest leaving for overseas.
Yeah, which feels like it's happening a lot recently. You mentioned about the uncertainty that is keeping a lid on things. And I think that's a really good point. Because one of the other forecasts that I found interesting, a lot of the numbers that they were putting out was based on the idea of, they were saying, you know, we think the Iran situation is going to resolve quite soon. Now, I might be negative on this. I'm super open to hearing your perspective on it. But to me, that feels a little bit rosy, because I look at the decisions that are being made there, there's been many declarations of, we've finally reached an agreement, and then they haven't, and they're bombing each other again. What do you think in terms of where you see that situation heading and the knock-on impacts on New Zealand and the economics of it?
I'm with you on that one. I'm also a bit skeptical. I wouldn't call it over. And every time you check the news, President Trump has said something else first. There's a deal, now there's no deal. And we've seen it over the past. You can't trust those messages. So I'll be careful. So I don't see the issue being resolved that quickly. And even if it were resolved, we still see the follow-on effects trickling through. So I don't think that issue will be fixed.
What do you think in that case then? Is it just the new normal, that things are quite uncertain and you just have to plan for uncertain?
Yes, I believe we live in more uncertain times than probably ever before. I mean, and if it wasn't the old crisis, then there were these punitive tariffs that were suddenly coming out of the US, and then the European Union retaliating. All these things impact on us. While we have seen a big drive for globalization for a long, long time, it now almost feels like we are going back from that. Countries have started to be more protective. Tariffs are a sign of this. And when the US starts to impose tariffs left, right, and center, then other countries will follow simply in retaliation. So there might be a trend going less global and then more focusing on yourself. And that seems to be the new normal. So yes, I think we simply need to get used to this, because 6 months ago, we were suddenly wondering about the tariffs. Then suddenly the oil crisis came. Even if we resolve this now, there'll be something else coming up.
There always is. It's a little bit grim. So if that does happen, I agree with you that we are seeing this retreat away from what we had as the world order, where countries worked in together and it was very much, you know, open borders, open trade was the push, and now retreating back into protectionism. And it's an interesting trend. How do you think people will notice that? Like, how will that show up in the average person's daily life if that trend continues?
Well, the cost of living crisis is exactly such a manifestation. Things will become less affordable, and we might see governments providing less handouts simply because they can't afford it anymore. If the economy is slow, there's less tax income for the government, there's less money to spend. And then we start fixing the holes and the shortcomings by borrowing money, but that costs money as well. If the government borrows, they have to pay interest, just like you and me when we borrow money from the bank. So there's a bit of a vicious circle. The more we spend on interest, the less we can spend on other things. So people might not like to hear this, but it's maybe a readjustment is required. Go back 30, 40, 50 years, and the general expectation was that the government provides an environment in which we can look after ourselves. Then that slightly changed to expecting the government to provide for us. Maybe we need to slightly go back on that and realize that, yeah, the best we can hope for is that the government provides an environment where we can thrive, but it's up to us to do so. And once we understand or accept this, then we might realize that the responsibility is on us. We can't always expect when prices go up due to whatever to suddenly get a government handout. And I think that's what the government was signaling as well. There was very little in there, tiny bits, to help with the cost of living crisis. But it was quite clear that it's not going to be a time for handouts and quick fixes on those issues.
I totally agree. Very much the underlying vibe of the budget was a wee bit, you're on your own, kid. And, you know, they had, to be fair, they'd flagged it ahead of time. They'd said it won't be a lolly scramble budget. They were not kidding. No lolly scramble in there. So if we explore that a bit further in terms of both if it's the government providing an environment where people can thrive, what might that look like? And then also as individuals, what can we do to get ahead in times like this?
It's a rough issue overall, because we do believe in a welfare state. There are people who do need our help and who are disadvantaged. The challenge will be to differentiate those people from others who benefit but wouldn't really need to. And the danger by withdrawing this welfare support, because people who might actually genuinely need it might now miss out. That is not an easy path to go for a government, but sometimes they are forced to simply. There's no other options. I'm sure a government would always like to look after its people and provide some financial support when times are tough. But just as much as we would like to, for example, help our kids, if we are struggling just to pay the mortgage, and that might not be possible. There's the difference in what the government might like to do, but simply what it is able to do. And as you said, they flagged it ahead of time.
This episode of Making Sense is supported by Odoo. Be honest, how many subscriptions are you paying for right now to run your business or side hustle? Because I reckon it's more than you'd like to admit, and half of them don't even work together. That's exactly why I like Odoo. It's one platform with 70 apps, accounting, invoicing, sales, inventory, HR, your website, no extra subscriptions, no new logins. It's all already there, starting from $34.40 Aussie dollars per user per month. And the first app is free for life, hosting and support included. Try it for free for 15 days, no card details needed. Go to odoo.com. That's odoo.com. Quick interruption to say, if you're enjoying this episode, you'll love The Market Memo, my weekly newsletter where I teach you how to actually invest. No jargon, no spreadsheets, just real talk about shares and how to make your money work for you. It's the thing I wish I'd had when I was starting out. You can sign up for free at francescook.co.nz/invest. That's francescook.co.nz/invest. But don't worry, I'll put the link in the show notes and the description of this podcast. All right, back to it.
What do you think would be the ideal in terms of if you could change any settings, whether it's sort of the big picture thing of what should we change some settings to make things a bit better? And then are there any things that the average New Zealander could be aiming for in this type of economic environment to make their life a little bit better?
I think from a government perspective, we need to tackle that productivity issue. We need to tap into the Kiwi ingenuity, and we just need to find some form of strategy to make it not coincidental if somebody gets it, but have a bit more behind it. We need to figure out why our businesses sometimes struggle, and that has a lot to do with compliance. New Zealand's compliance costs are unbelievably high. We also haven't maybe put as much emphasis on the whole management idea in international rankings. The management qualities of New Zealand don't rank as highly as they possibly could. And that has possibly something to do with the fact that New Zealanders are used to be a jack of all trades. If you run your business, you do a bit of this, you do a bit of that. And you think, oh, I can do that as well. Not realizing that we do believe in specializations. There might be people who focus on a specific area and get really good at it, but we tend to not quite believe in that. We sort of, I can do that myself kind of thing. It's all there. We just need to be a bit smarter with it for people. Difficult. Maybe it requires some reflection. There's this famous thing and the idea of we can be prosperous without growth. We've gotten obsessed with the idea that GDP always needs to grow, right? If we don't grow, we go backwards. It's driving. And then that phrase, absolutely beautiful, that parts of our issue is that we buy things with money we don't have to impress people we don't care about.
Yes.
And that is part of things. Maybe we can have some phones that are not the latest or drive a car that's a few years old. Or just reflecting on individuals that now is possibly the time to maybe be a bit more careful with your spending and realize what a beautiful country New Zealand is and enjoy what it offers rather than to feel under pressure to always keep up with the latest, most modern stuff.
I want to pick up on a point that you made earlier as well, when we were talking about some of the things that are driving that cost of living increase, the inflation, being some of those locked in costs that people can't really avoid, you know, things like the council rates, the insurances, food. People are going to keep paying for that no matter what, because what else are you going to do? And what we've used through so much of history to control the cost of living, and it's a blunt tool, but it's a tool that has worked until now. And that's changing interest rates. Make debt more expensive. And we always talk about it in relation to mortgages. But it does, of course, impact all sorts of things. It's your mortgage, it's your credit card, it's business loans. When they change the official cash rate, all of those things are impacted. And that's why it can be such a wide-ranging tool. So it has a lot of knock-on impacts. It is often very unpleasant medicine. But yet, as we saw in the sort of post-COVID times when inflation did go nuts, if inflation goes up, that's worse. So interest rates going up, not fun. Inflation going up more, worse. If, you know, now, as you have pointed out, we are seeing inflation driven by things that people can't really avoid. If it is fuel, which then knocks onto so much else in our lives, if it is rates that we can't stop paying, they have signaled interest rates are probably going up. They're going to use the only tool they've got, but is that going to stop it?
You're right. What we see is generally to fight inflation, the OCR goes up. It simply means money becomes more expensive, and that means we spend less because suddenly you still live in the same house and you pay twice as much in interest because the OCR has gone up. That'll stop you spending somewhere else. But the Reserve Bank knows very well that the domestic inflation can't be changed by changing the OCR. And we have just seen the latest announcement. The Reserve Bank governor kept the OCR where it was. There was no increase because normally external shocks like the oil crisis, Reserve Banks don't tend to overreact and quickly increase the OCR because the expectation is that that will normalize and an understanding that changing the OCR won't change our domestic inflation. So we have seen this, and it was an interesting time because it was the first time our new Reserve Bank governor had to make a crucial decision. And it wasn't an easy one because increasing the OCR would have meant killing the little bit of growth we had anyway. But as you said, the inflation rate has gone outside the band, the 1-3% and band and the 2% we target. So there could have been a response from the Reserve Bank governor by saying, well, I care more about inflation than about the economy, because the economy is the government's responsibility. Inflation is the Reserve Bank's. She didn't increase the OCR. So there's a signal that our Reserve Bank is encouraging growth. Possibly in the next round, we will still not see an increase in the OCR. So there's an acute awareness of what changing the interest rate does to the economy. And as you said, it's not just your mortgage rate. That's one part, but business spending is another huge part. Businesses respond much, much quicker than individuals to changes in the OCR. If the OCR goes up, what we tend to do is we save a bit on the things we don't necessarily need. We go out less often for a dinner, maybe less to the movie, but we find ways. Businesses respond much, much quicker. Interest rates go up, they simply stop investing, they stop expanding. So
stop hiring.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So what we see is that the change of the OCR has a trickle effect, and it's widely spread. So the Reserve Bank is careful in doing so, and we've seen that, and it's a good sign. I was very happy to see that the OCR didn't go up, because it is a very blunt tool that impacts in so many ways, and right now possibly not the best tool to improve what's happening in New Zealand, because we'll first need to get some momentum into economic growth, because that has a trickle-on effect. If business expectations are low, then it's as much numbers, it is emotions and a mindset. And I think that's a bigger danger. What we have seen is that, yes, petrol at the pump has gone up, but we are now seeing trickling this through into our expectations and our outlook. And that's a dangerous part, because then things become sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. We now expect things to get worse. That means companies stop expanding, stop hiring people. That in itself makes things worse, because suddenly unemployment starts to go up. That creates more unrest and more uncertainty in business world. So it's sort of a vicious circle. So once it gets into your head, then things start to get tricky. And I think that understanding made the Reserve Bank decide not to change the OCR. And we might not see another hike in the next round either. Maybe the Reserve Bank waits to see what will happen with inflation. There's a great expectation, and the market believes that there will be at least two rounds of sort of 0.25%. It's by looking at the forward market. Will it materialize? Well, we'll see.
Well, I think that's such a good point as well, because you see things like they'll do these like mood of the boardroom surveys and things like that. And I often see, especially on social media, like a lot of criticism saying, well, this doesn't reflect reality and this is just vibes. This is a bunch of CEOs being sad, and like, I get it. And I think that's a fair criticism in some ways. In other ways, I think that's missing the point, in that businesses are run by people and people are influenced by emotions. And if they feel like there's not very many opportunities out there, whether or not that's true, that's still going to guide their actions. And when it's such an uncertain global environment, do you think there's anything more that could be happening here to say, okay, we can't control all of these big global events. We can't control how trading partners might react. We can't control wars. We can't control what's happening all there. But is there anything we could be doing to increase that certainty here to then make it so that people feel like they can make some of those bigger business moves and increase that certainty for action here?
I think businesses have started to learn that risk assessment has to come now part of the regular things they need to do. We hit it very good. We all remember that rock solid economy for so long when inflation was almost non-existent. Companies simply didn't start thinking about what could happen and how to prepare for it, possibly to diversify, assess risk, have strategies into place. And then suddenly it happened and it caught everyone a little bit by surprise. So maybe companies need to account for changes in the OCR more in their business plans than they have done before. Maybe they need to do more global risk assessment and have strategies in place on what happens if it does come true. Businesses just need to be more vigilant in accounting for those risks, planning for those risks, and then confident hopefully will come back that these events are better managed, rather than come as a big surprise.
I think we see some huge changes in work in general. If we sort of pull it back from the business environment, but even the way people go to work, huge changes in the type of work that is rewarded and the type of work that is available. Do you see any more changes coming on that front for people that people can maybe prepare for?
Absolutely, because the popularity of AI and the advances we have made in that space, that's only getting better, will have huge impact on jobs that are very repetitive, that are very rule-based and very well structured, because these can be replaced and are starting to get replaced. If I just think of accounting, writing, all these kind of areas where we'll see replacement, there will be pressure there. But there are also sectors that are not that affected by it. For example, if you think of the whole construction infrastructure, building industry, your AI will not renovate your kitchen. You still need people to do this. It's the same with aged care and health. We still need people to look after other people, to help others. We still need medicine, will have an impact. Doctors will have support, but we still need those people right there. So as with any great disruptor in technology, some people will lose their jobs of it, but it will create new jobs as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at even the Industrial Revolution, we've seen this before. There is this period of destruction where other things that we've had for years, decades, sometimes even hundreds of years are gone. But then you get other jobs that come from that. You know, there's still someone who needs to maintain the new machines or work with the new AI and interpret what's coming from it, you know. And so I do think trying to push back on change is pointless. It the genie is often out of the bottle no matter what. It's then figuring out, okay, if this is the new situation, what are the opportunities that can be found in that, right?
Yep. Oh, funnily enough, a great economist, Maynard Keynes, wrote a paper almost 100 years ago where it was about the future of my grandchildren, and his belief was that with the new technologies, we now only will work 20 hours a week because machines will take over a lot of the stuff. And we'll have to find ways of entertaining ourselves almost. And look at this, we work more than we did back then. Every time we thought new technologies will make our life so much easier that we won't be knowing what to do with our spare time, it hasn't worked. It has only put more work on our plate. So I don't think this time around it will be much different either.
We're very good at finding ways to give ourselves more work.
Exactly. If you want to work, you'll find something to do, right?
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so coming back to this idea of, you know, where we started at the beginning, this feeling that people have been slogging through for a wee while, looking for the recovery, it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back. Where do you think we might be at in terms of, is a recovery coming? How long might it take? And what should people be watching for to know it's coming?
If I knew, be a very wealthy man, I suppose. What do the numbers say? The numbers suggest that economic growth is going to be very slow for the rest of the year. Inflation won't help. Unemployment won't help. But there's also nothing in there that suggests we are ready for a disaster. Now, New Zealand as a country is actually in surprisingly good shape. Our debt level is way below what a lot of countries in the OECD. Yeah, it has gone up to about 60% of our GDP, but that's low compared to countries like the US or the UK, which are well over 100, 120% of their GDP. So New Zealand is in relatively good shape, and the government now believes we get back to positive numbers a year earlier than expected, right? So we are still running a budget deficit, but it's getting smaller and back to, so that's a good sign. Maybe we need to get used to the fact that waiting for that big improvement is not the right thing to do, but look at the things how they are right now and accept that this is how it's going to be, because otherwise it's just getting a bit frustrating being told year after year, this year will be better, next year will be better, and then next year is, and so on. So maybe it's more of accepting that this is how it's going to go and how it will stay. I understand the gloom, but it's a nice place to be, New Zealand. So we might sometimes just forget that it is, given some of the issues we have. And New Zealand is a small, isolated economy. We are punching above our weight in quite a few areas. So don't forget that as well.
Yeah. Well, okay, for the average person then who might be listening to this and trying to figure out what next for themselves, is there anything you'd say to them, either to give them a little bit of hope for the future or to say, you know, this is something you could control to maybe take back a bit of agency here.
Exactly the same things that you have said in many of your podcasts before too. Be a bit careful with your spending. See where you can cut a bit and make sure you have a buffer, some kind of reserves, because these down periods will come so that you're not completely caught out. Because this is what creates the real stress. And this is real for people. If suddenly you're struggling to pay the bills, that's stress. That's unpleasant. So maybe be a bit more careful. Maybe put a little bit more aside than you had in the past, or you can see, so you can ride out these waves. It's not doom and gloom in New Zealand. It's not.
Love it. Thank you so much, Christoph, for coming on. I always really appreciate your very considered thoughts. It's so good to talk to you. Look, if this episode was helpful to you, send it to a friend so we can all get prepared, level up our money together. Until next time, have a great day.
This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most situations. It's not individual financial advice. If you're after that, a financial advisor is always the best bet.